Well now, the BBC World Service, One Planet, and the first in a series of four programmes on World Without Waste. Today, we look at the USA.
Hello, I'm Lynn Malcolm, and this is the start of a journey exploring the possibility of a world without waste. Right now, governments, scientists and communities are struggling to find solutions for the endless mountains of rubbish created each day from what we consume and what we throw away. Sometimes we burn it, sometimes we recycle it, but all too often we dump it in open waste sites like this one here in Manila, where people have to make a living out of scavenging off the rubbish. Over the next four programs in this series on the BBC World Service, I'll return to the Philippines and also visit Japan, China and the United States. We'll discover how these countries are managing their waste problem as they strive for a balance between economic prosperity and ecological harmony. It's a concept with a long tradition in the state of California, where our story begins.
These are all this year's crops?
Yeah.
Probably just came in?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go for the break.
A typical farmer's market in San Francisco, where choosy customers pick over the best fruits and veggies that the local producers have to offer. As we'll hear later on, these markets play an important role in the city's drive towards a concept called zero waste. It's about a major commitment to reducing waste and increasing recycling. San Francisco has entrusted this task to a newly created Department of the Environment. Its director is Jared Blumenfeld.
San Francisco has adopted the goal of getting to zero waste by 2020 and to get to 75% by 2010. So at the moment, of all the waste we produce, which is about 1.8 million tons per year, or two Golden Gate Bridges, if you weigh the Golden Gate Bridge, of waste is what we produce. 67% of that waste does not end up in landfill, so it's either recycled or reused. It's a pretty ambitious, controversial goal. We decided we needed to set a goal so that we could actually get there. When Kennedy set the goal of getting to the moon, no one believed that it was possible. How could we land a man on the moon? But it happened. We think just having the goal stirs a debate about what is zero waste and how we actually can plan to get there. So it's definitely ambitious, some would say audacious. We believe it's necessary and we're really looking at how we can get there.
The department is looking at a whole range of measures to reach this goal of zero waste, including making recycling a legal requirement, banning the sale of toxic materials that can't be recycled, and giving consumers financial incentives to buy environmentally friendly products. It's this all-round approach which captures the essence of what zero waste really means. Anne Leonard is one of the area's leading environmental campaigners and a spokesperson for GAIA, the Global Anti-Incinerator Alliance.
We use a term called zero waste, which refers to a sort of collection of practices and policies to reduce waste at source and then to safely recycle and compost the waste that is produced. On a practical level, zero waste refers to these policies, practices. On a deeper level, zero waste refers to a real paradigm shift in how we deal with materials. Conventional waste management has just assumed that ever-increasing amounts of waste are inevitable and have really been stuck in this sort of bury or burn trap. Are you going to burn it or are you going to bury it? The sort of it's got to go somewhere mentality, or what are we going to do with it? And zero waste really turns this conventional thinking on its head, takes a step back and says, are there ways that we can reduce this waste? Can we design waste out of the system? Can we make products longer lasting? Can we address the root causes of overconsumption in a lot of countries? Can we reduce the use of toxics so that the materials that we are using are safer to keep in circulation in society? And really looks at avoiding as much waste as possible from the start.
San Francisco is the world leader when it comes to zero waste. Two-thirds of the 1.8 million tons the city produces is recycled or reused in some way. To achieve this, they've developed a unique relationship with the company that handles most of their waste, NorCal. Garbage is a cutthroat business in the United States, with vast profits at stake. But NorCal, unlike many other companies, makes its money not from what it dumps, but from what it diverts, recycles and sells for profit. Mike San Giacomo is NorCal's CEO.
If you have companies that control major quantities of landfill capacity and they're publicly held, their goal is to fill those landfills. Well, we're not in that position. We compete with those companies. We have to find ways of doing things that are different so that we have a competitive edge. It helps that we have the environmental bent. We are way ahead of other cities in this country in terms of the types of materials we recycle, certainly collecting any paper, bottles, containers, whether they're glass, plastic, or metal, and finding reuses for them. We take food scraps and we turn those scraps into a pretty high value compost. We're selling that product to over 50 California vineyards. We're selling it to organic farmers. We're selling it to golf courses and landscapers. We're looking as well at other uses for organic materials, things like the production of liquid and solid fertilizers. We're looking at energy production, whether it's taking organics and digesting them, capturing the gases. And we're looking at things like ethanol production, if that can be done in a way where more energy is produced in the ethanol process than is consumed in making ethanol. We think there might be a value in doing that kind of thing. And we take construction waste, and rather than just throwing that in a landfill, find materials there that are, again, can be used for other purposes. We're looking at everything in the waste stream and trying to find something to do with it.
If you live in San Francisco, then outside your house you'll have three dustbins or carts: a green one for food and yard waste, a black bin for general rubbish, and a blue one for recyclables like paper, glass and plastic bottles. NorCal has built a state-of-the-art recycling facility to process the contents of the blue cart, which has been the key to making recycling popular across the state. NorCal's Robert Reed explains why.
A growing trend in California is to allow people to put all bottles, cans, and paper together in one cart. In San Francisco, it's a blue cart, and we've distributed them throughout the city. We then come along and collect the contents of the blue cart, and we take it to a recycling plant that we built specifically to process bottles, cans, and paper. That plant is full of modern conveyor systems and things called spinning disc screens that temporarily suspend gravity. So the lighter materials float over the top. The paper goes upstream. The heavier materials, the bottles and cans, they tumble downstream. Some of these things can be separated mechanically. Unfortunately, the plastic bottles will not react to a magnet, and so they must be hand-sorted. And unfortunately, there are too many different kinds of plastic bottles in the waste stream. This is a problem. So we have hand sorters that separate and put the clear bottles in this location and the colored bottles in another location and the opaque bottles in a third. But when we distributed the blue carts, recycling immediately increased 25% because it made it very easy and efficient for the customer to put all their bottles, cans, and paper into one container and then go on about their business. It made recycling very fast. And people like that. So this is a trend that is very popular in California.
It was time to get my hands dirty and find out how all of this waste is dealt with. I followed the trail of the green and black rubbish carts to a vast industrial complex on the edge of San Francisco. It's where hundreds of tons of organic matter and general household rubbish arrive each day. It's also home to the city's construction waste, nearly all of which is sorted and recycled. Plant manager is Kenny Stewart.
This is our transfer station here. We currently see around 2,000, 2,300 tons of trash that actually come into this facility on a daily basis. In San Francisco, we have a three-cart system. The black can is just household garbage, the green can is food scraps and yard waste, and the blue can is recyclables. All the recyclables will go to our other facility at Pier 96. The black can, that's what you see there, that representative, that is actually, can't be recycled, and it goes off to the landfill. And the green can, I'll show you when we go in the building, we currently see about 300 tons a day of food waste, yard waste. And that's taken off to our other facility for processing for compost.
We've just entered another building. What a sight. an industrial nightmare. It's a riot of dumper trucks and mountains of rubbish, and a complex network of conveyor belts and walkways. And what a smell. Still, the seagulls seem to be enjoying it. Strangely though, the place has a kind of order about it. Everything seems to know where it's going. So this is what a city's waste looks like.
This is where all of the debris boxes, construction debris, come from City and County of San Francisco. And we pull wood, cardboard, metal, plastic. The wood is put off to the other side. We actually grind that up and it's sent off for fuel, which is burnt for alternative energy. The plastic goes overseas for a plastic market, which is a new market that we just embarked on right now. The metal is also sent overseas. The sheetrock is sent up to our composting facility, actually blended in for compost. And the cardboard is baled and shipped overseas as well.
Further along is the penultimate resting place for what goes off to the landfill, as well as the composting centre. A huge pit filled with two enormous mountains of rubbish.
This is actually the size of a football field. Right now, what you see here, you're seeing roughly around somewhere between 1,700 and 2,000 tons currently in this pit. And basically, this is where everything comes from San Francisco. That is not recycled, okay, except for the yard waste and the food waste. 10 years ago, you saw wood, you saw metal, you saw plastics in this pit. You don't see that anymore. What you see is a lot of plastic bags, a lot of paper still, because we're relying on the customer to do that. We're going to have to take it a step further.
You know, San Franciscans see recycling as a religion. People, you know, feel ashamed if they haven't recycled properly. People will go to the ends of the world to recycle styrofoam. They'll drive 30, 40 miles. We get hundreds of calls here a week. How do we recycle styrofoam? There's one place down in San Jose that does it. People drive there.
I live on a piece of property with one other cottage, and I notice they don't take the labels off their cans, nor do, or the tops off their bottles, so I end up doing that a lot.
People tend to put something in a recycling bin and feel good about themselves, and then forget all about what's happening to the item afterwards. And in the meantime, new things are still being produced out of the Earth's natural resources.
A lot of my recycling goes to a local person that comes and collects it in the neighborhood, and they sell it, and that's how they support their family.
You're listening to One Planet on the BBC World Service, and I'm Lynn Malcolm, exploring a world without waste. San Francisco's combination of legislation and technology has given it a degree of success in the war on waste. But across the bay, in the city of Berkeley, famous for its laid-back approach to life, the recycling revolution is a little more low-tech, but it still gets the job done. Shift workers get to grips with the day's waste at the Berkeley Recycling Yard. I talked to Martin Bork of the Ecology Centre, an organisation that's managed the city's not-for-profit recycling program for 30 years.
We have a manual sorting line. All this stuff goes up over this conveyor belt. And as it goes across the conveyor belt, there's six staff people sorting by hand. First, they pull out anything that's not recyclable. The next person online is going to be pulling out the two kinds of plastic bottles. Then there's a magnet that pulls off the tin. The next couple people are sorting glass into three different colors. If you don't sort your glass into three colors, then it's likely to become some kind of aggregate, either for asphalt, or it may be put back on the landfill to cover it at the end of the day. So people think they're recycling, but it's actually being put back in the landfill. We think that's atrocious. So we sort our glass into three colors and make sure it gets turned back into bottles again.
Berkeley and its big sister, San Francisco, seem on the face of it to be working towards the same goal, increasing diversion rates to get closer to zero waste. But they differ on how to achieve that. In particular, the increasingly popular practice of throwing all recyclables into a single bin, commingled recycling, is one that worries Martin Bork.
There are a lot of people in the industry who want to make recycling as easy as possible for the consumer, and that is important. The easier it is, the more tons you get, et cetera, et cetera. But you can't make ease for the customer outweigh quality of the output of the product. you know, everyone was really excited about this highly automated, you know, we'll get lots more volume, we'll collect more tons, we'll save money on collections. But I think what people are really finding when they really dig in is that most programs, unless they're extremely well managed and have really good equipment and somebody's really on top of it making sure that the quality is really good, most of these programs are collecting more, recycling less, and passing the cost upstream.
Back in the big city, quality is also something that occupies the minds of shoppers and producers at one of the weekly farmers markets.
Not too ripe. This is not.
Yeah. Much of the food here was grown using compost made from organic waste collected in the green bins. Robert Reed from NorCal.
We collect food scraps in the form of kitchen trimmings and plate scrapings from businesses and from people's homes. We collect 300 tons a day in San Francisco alone. We take this material to a modern compost facility that we own and operate. We compost it, and the result is very nutrient-rich compost. It's rich in nitrogen, in potassium, in potash, and organic matter. And you get a microbial action. Microorganisms come and eat the food that's in the compost. And that process makes these nutrients directly available to the roots of the plants.
I'd like to try and close the loop in the earth. So using organic compost is a way of sustainably farming. And so that's very important to me. I also like the fact that I get to meet the local people who actually grow the food rather than just have a corporation deliver it to a store and not really have a face associated or a farmer associated with the food.
I try and keep things as long as I can, and then if they're going to go bad, I make sure they are going to be compostable, or I don't buy too much quantity, so I don't have a lot of waste. So just preventing it so you don't even have to get to that point.
I keep a pile of kind of garbage in my backyard that I intend to compost one day, but I haven't composted yet.
The produce, the fruits, the vegetables, the wines come back to San Francisco, and in many cases they're served in the very restaurants that generated the food scraps to begin with. So what you end up with is a local closed-loop recycling program. There's very few examples of that anywhere in the country, and it's been very embraced by the restaurants, and it's working very well.
One of the first restaurants to take part in the food scrap scheme was The Slanted Door, run by celebrity chef Charles Farn. His reputation and enthusiasm helped to kick-start the movement amongst the city's eateries.
Starting here, we have a blue color bin, so you try to get everything color coded. You can tell the paper, chicken, and we have here our broken glasses, our plastic. That's get all recycled. We recycle our frying oil. Here's a little mistake. That paper should be in there. It's a small mistake, but I make a big deal out of it.
Growing up in Vietnam, where we pretty much recycle everything, and it was really second nature to not throw everything away. We started out composting just vegetable. Maybe a year into it, and they switched. They say, oh, you can put meat, paper, all that product. It just literally, you know, reduced our waste by 75%. And we're hearing this great story that they can sell the stuff, and it's really, everybody likes it. And I think being a chef in general, you just don't want to waste, period. So by knowing that you could put, let's say, the end pieces of a broccoli go to some good use, you really just feel a lot better. When I come into the restaurant, not only I check my food and what it tastes, you know, if they prepare it properly, I have to check the garbage. It just becomes second nature. Every morning I walk by, I look at what they cut, and I look inside their garbage can.
It's not just the restaurant industry that's reaping the benefits of turning rubbish into a resource. Many areas of manufacturing, including local electronic firms, wineries, and thousands of small businesses, have found ways of saving or making money through better waste management. But what about engineering the waste out of products in the first place, during the design and manufacturing stages? Jared Blumenfeld from San Francisco's Department of the Environment feels that there's still a long way to go. Just take plastics, for example.
If you look on the bottom of any plastic, for instance, just plastic, it goes 1 through 7, and it has a recycling symbol. Just the number of plastic polymers are 249 plastic polymers that go into those seven numbers. Only about six of those 249 can be recycled. So people are making products that cannot be recycled and putting a recycle logo on the side. So there's lots that could potentially be recycled, but they aren't being. The most complicated thing to recycle will be appliances, computers, things that are made out of multiple components that are very difficult to take apart. When you think about a refrigerator, it's a relatively difficult job to take that to pieces and make sure that every component part is recycled properly. So the first thing is to work with designers to make sure that products can be recycled.
The waste story in California seems like an optimistic one, a place where garbage is increasingly being viewed as a resource, something of value, rather than something to bury or burn. And San Francisco is definitely a role model for how a city could work towards zero waste. But there's a bigger issue at stake than just rubbish, and it has to do with turning back the tide of consumerism, something still so central to the American way of life. So for Martin Bork, Anne Leonard and Jared Blumenfeld, there's still a lot of work to be done.
There are lots of new programs out there, and we are reaching new diversion goals, and there is gained awareness in the society at large. At the same time, we see new, totally ridiculous disposable products coming online that are just obscene. You know, what do you need a disposable toilet brush head that you can, you know, clean your toilet and then flush it down the toilet, and it's got one use? It's an obscenity.
The amount of consumption that we have in the United States is absolutely off the scale of sustainability, and I think that we could definitely learn from other countries about how to meet our basic needs in a more sustainable manner.
All those discussion items around zero waste really impact every other aspect of our life and our environment. So if you can solve and get to zero waste, you're really setting up models for solving all the issues around climate change, all the issues around toxic releases that are facing our planet, and environmental health.
The next program in our BBC series, A World Without Waste, offers a stark contrast to the situation in the United States. I'll be in the Philippines, where in the recent past, poor waste management has cost hundreds of lives, forcing local communities to take a stand in order to protect their health and their livelihoods. Join me then.
World Without Waste was presented by Lynn Malcolm, and the producer was Ramit Sabah. It was a joint production between the Australian Broadcasting Corporation and the BBC World Service.
BBC World Service.